This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
Hey, what's up, everybody? August 31st, Straight Fire. I am your host, Jason McIntyre, entering week 4 on the podcast. So much fun. Can't wait to start football here later this week, actually. Hope everybody did have a really solid weekend wrapping up the month. I had my big money fantasy football draft, you know, played some board games with the kids. Very low-key action. Watched a lot of basketball. But, you know, I'm kind of excited that today is the final day of August 2020. I mean, geez, you know, the year's been awful. August was pretty bad. And I don't know about you guys, a quick word on the passing of Black Panther. I mean, listen, this hit me hard on Friday. I talked about it on my Saturday Fox Sports radio show. Chadwick Boseman, the great actor who played Black Panther, he just died. I had no idea he had colon cancer. He'd been fighting it for 4 years. Just an absolute shocker, because I'm about the same age as him, Kobe Bryant, and to see these guys passing away, just unbelievable. And I remember taking my kids to see Black Panther in the theater, and it's packed. I think it was opening weekend. And when Killmonger throws Black Panther off the waterfall, "Is this your king?" And he tosses him. My kids stood up next to me. "Dad!" They were so shaken. And I'm sitting here kind of laughing, but also like, guys, shh. You know, heroes survive, okay? The star of the movie is going to be okay. And they were just so shaken. I'll never forget it. My kid dressed up as Black Panther that Halloween. And it was just, oh man, it was, you know, I just, RIP Chadwick Boseman. All right, on to the biggest sports story here on Monday. It is not the cluster injuries on the Philadelphia Eagles offense. I'm sure you guys saw Carson Wentz a little dinged up. It is not the injury to Derwin James, the Chargers safety. My gosh, he better not be out that long. He was hurt last year. It killed him. He's hurt again. And it is not, although it was nearly, the best receiver in college football, Ja'Marr Chase, leaving college football, opting out due to COVID. He's not going to play for LSU. This guy is a potential top 5 pick. He is a monster. He was a stud last year for LSU. Go look up his YouTube reel, Ja'Marr Chase, opting out of college football. Listen, it's a smart move. But the biggest story in sports here on Monday, without a doubt, is the LA Clippers and their bully ball in the bubble. And I want to start here. When you're in college, okay, you know, you're supposed to party hard, get it out of your system, and kind of find out who you are, or at least get on the path to who you're going to be. And when you get out of college, you know, you get your first job, you are starting to transition into adulthood. I don't think you're an adult at 21. I know you can drink at 21, you can certainly obviously vote, but I wasn't an adult at 21. And you start to form an identity after college. And I'll tell you how this relates to the Clippers, who now have an identity. It's very clear and where they got it. But like, for me, we moved out here to LA 4 years ago and, you know, I'm sports guy. Oh, he does Fox. He talks sports for Fox Radio, TV. And I coach my kids in sports. I coach them both in soccer and basketball. And I go to the gym and then I play pickup basketball. And pretty quickly, my identity is, oh yeah, that's sports guy, Jason. He's into exercise. And then the pandemic hits and you kind of lose your identity. Can't coach any kids sports. Can't go to the gym. Can't play any sports. I have played golf and tennis, but, and then you wonder like, wait, is my identity wrapped up in sports? I don't want to be sports guy, Jason. I'm bigger than that. I'm more than that. We change, we grow, we evolve, we're humans. And what Doc Rivers has done with these Clippers, I have to give him a lot of credit, folks. The evolution of Lob City to Bully Ball Clippers goon action is complete. This is the new Clippers identity, and it goes back to Doc Rivers as a player. Remember, he was on my favorite New York Knicks team ever, the 93 Knicks, the same team that led Jordan in the Eastern Conference Finals 2-0 before caving and losing. They had Anthony Mason. They had a rugged brand. John Starks was on that team. They had, as my guy Chris Broussard likes to say, they had dogs. That was their identity. They could never get past Jordan, but that was the best chance. Remember, the Pistons in the 80s held Jordan off with the Bad Boys, Jordan Rules, Bill Laimbeer, Rick Mahorn, and Doc Rivers brought that to the Knicks when he was playing for them. And if you look back, and I went and looked at Doc Rivers' coaching career, and you can see why he's turned these Clippers into goons and why the roster is full of these guys who are playing a thuggish brand of basketball, who are clobbering superstars, because that's all they can do. Marcus Morris tossed out of the game Sunday for essentially like a clothesline karate chop WWE wrestling move. And it, you know, finally people are starting to see what we talked about last week. Rob G loves to say, we want to be early on stuff. We were early on this. Last week we told you, this is what the Clippers are. This is their identity. This is what they want to do. They want to play physical basketball and muck it up. And you know what? Doc Rivers has only been successful one, what's really successful to win a championship one other time. And take a guess where it was. The Boston Celtics. And Rob G reminded me of this. Their roster, when they took down the Lakers, okay, they added Kevin Garnett, we know, and they added Ray Allen, and they had a super team because they needed a super team to push back against LeBron. LeBron was ready to take over the East. Remember, he went to the finals as a 22-year-old, took a junk Cavs roster to the finals. He was ready to take over the East. The Celtics countered with, we're going to make a super team. But it wasn't just a super team. And this is what nobody's really talked about. And this is going to be a big story this week, I promise you. Doc Rivers and Danny Ainge built a roster full of physical guys who are going to get in your face, foul the hell out of you, send a message in guys like Kendrick Perkins, guys like Tony Allen. Remember, Tony Allen went on to be, you know, one of the linchpins behind the grit and grind Memphis Grizzlies teams. They made a Western Conference Finals once, but Tony Allen, I mean, he's just a bulldog in the backcourt. But what the Celtics did with Doc Rivers as coach, the only time he was successful as a coach, they had P.J. Brown. You guys remember him? He was on those Miami Heat teams. They really roughed it up with the New York Knicks. I'm almost certain P.J. Brown was in the middle of that huge fight, Alonzo Mourning, Heat, Knicks, Jeff Van Gundy clinging to the ankle. That's what P.J. Brown did. That was his brand of basketball. He was going to snarl at you. And folks, this is what that Clippers team is. Obviously, they have a superstar who's above all that nonsense in Kawhi Leonard. And, you know, Kawhi Leonard was phenomenal in this series. He just took over in the fourth quarter against the Mavs. Luka led a pretty amazing comeback. And all of a sudden, Doc Rivers puts Kawhi Leonard in, and it's like, boom, boom, boom. Thank you. Good night. We'll see you next year, Dallas Mavericks. I mean, Kawhi was unbelievable. But the reason Doc has done this, you just go back and look at the Clippers pre Marcus Morris, Patrick Beverley, Montrezl Harrell. Look at the team before that. They had Chris Paul. They had Blake Griffin. They had DeAndre Jordan. I mean, they could score. They were exciting. They had a lot of dunks, but that was not a defensive team. The Warriors ran roughshod through them. They were so mentally fragile, they choked away a 3-1 lead. You guys remember that in the playoffs? I know they had some injuries, but Doc Rivers, he probably would never admit this. And by the way, I like Doc Rivers as a player. I'm not crushing him here. I hope it doesn't seem like that. But I liked him on those Hawks teams with Dominique Wilkins, and I liked him on that Knicks team. My favorite Knicks team ever. I was born in New York, and I love that New York Knicks team in 93. But it's pretty clear Doc has made the identity of these Clippers. It ain't Kawhi Leonard. It's not Paul George. It is basically, we are going to rough you up. You ain't getting anything in the lane. We're going to get in your face, and we're going to flap our gums. We're going to run our mouth the whole damn time. And whoever they face, the Jazz or the Nuggets, which it appears is going to be going to Game 7. Can you believe that? I mean, the Jazz look like they had this thing in hand, and the Nuggets have stormed back to force a Game 7. Jamal Murray has been going crazy. I don't know if the Nuggets or Jazz can do any damage against the Clippers next round. I'll tell you this, the Nuggets have some guys who ain't going to back down. Jamal Murray is no punk. I know it's Rob G's favorite player on the Nuggets, but Jamal Murray ain't going to back down. And I'm fascinated to see how, remember, David Stern instituted a dress code in 2005. A quick history lesson. So that 90s era in the NBA is fondly remembered. Everybody looks back on it great. But what they don't see is There was no magic. There was no bird. It was the Michael Jordan show. Michael Jordan beat up a watered-down NBA in the 90s. I've said this plenty of times on Undisputed, Cowherd Show, all over FS1. People refuse to believe the facts. The 90s was expansion-era basketball, and Jordan beat up on a lot of tomato cans, okay? Where it gets interesting is when you remove Jordan after his second retirement, the league was awful. Late 90s, physical basketball, low scoring. I know the Lakers, Kobe, and Shaq had a good run, but that obscured from the rest of the league, which was pretty bad. David Stern instituted the dress code, and they tightened up all these nonsense fouls and letting people just hammer one another to clean up the game because it was going down a bad path. The NBA did not have a great reputation. That's why David Stern changed things for the better. Okay? The dress code worked. Cleaning up the rules worked. And I know some people are going to say, oh, Jason, you're just so soft. You can't handle these hard fouls. What are you talking about? No. It's smart to play a better brand of basketball as opposed to clobber people. Yeah, I know. I get it. I like the 80s basketball. I like 90s basketball. But this brand right now is unacceptable from the Clippers. Marcus Morris clobbering a star in Luka. He's gone after him 3 games. They finally tossed him. Folks, I'll say this just as a quick wrap-up here. They're not going to let these guys go at LeBron and Anthony Davis like that. There is just no way that's happening. I think the Lakers, you know, JaVale McGee, Dwight Howard, they have a Morris twin. Even Deion Waiters, J.R. Smith, they've got some guys who they're going to push back against the Clippers, that's for sure. That series, which almost certainly will happen. I'm not looking past the Rockets. It's not over yet. But I don't know. I don't like what Doc Rivers is doing. I understand it. I don't like it. All right, so that's my little rant on the Clippers to start the week. I've got a great interview coming up with Doug Gottlieb. I talked to him Sunday. The audio quality isn't as good as we're used to on this podcast. It was a busy Sunday morning, but it's a real good interview. We talk a little bit about everything, basketball-wise, social media-wise, so you'll want to stick around for that. The best bet will be at the end of the podcast. I had a great Sunday, went 3-1. Obviously didn't give it out on this show. And remember, subscribe, rate, and review. By the way, guys, I just checked the reviews. We are over 100. Way to go. Shout out to you guys. Now we can get to the next phase of the podcast. We have 2 more layers we want to slowly work in. I'm having so much fun with this. Again, I want to thank Scott Shapiro for the opportunity, Rob G, Gavin. It's a great team we got. And before all the Gottlieb fun begins, a quick word on the Boston Celtics dismembering the Raptors. Oh, the Raptors I love to beat up on. They killed them on Sunday. Just an evisceration. This is a crazy stat. And Rob G, who picked the Raptors in this series, is going to love this. So Toronto in the bubble is 11-0 against teams not the Celtics. Against the Celtics, they're 0-2 and have not led for 1 second in the second half. They got destroyed twice by Boston, folks. You've been hearing me on this podcast pump up the Celtics. They are a nightmare matchup for Toronto. The 3 things Toronto does best, right? Great backcourt with Lowry and Van Vliet. Okay, Celtics are better. They got a better backcourt. They can switch on everything. Number 2 is the coach. Nick Nurse is phenomenal. Well, Brad Stevens is pretty damn good. And number 3, the bench of Toronto is excellent. You could argue the best bench in the league. Folks, other than Serge Ibaka, their bench did nothing. And the problem is you can't really use them, A, because you're always behind, and B, because the Celtics don't really play a bench. And it's just, the Raptors got crushed in every facet of the game. Rob G, Daniel Theis, whatever, 13 points, 15 rebounds. Robert Williams off the bench, 10 points. They really played much better than Ibaka and Gasol. And if that continues, Raptors are in some real trouble. I'm not predicting a sweep here, because remember, last year Boston crushed the Bucks in the first game and then got destroyed in the next 4. So, not predicting a sweep. I did pick Celtics in 6 in this series, and I feel very confident. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but Kemba Walker is such a better fit for the Celtics team than Kyrie Irving. I don't know. Rob G, you have the Raptors in this series. Are you feeling a little down in the dumps?
Just a little bit. I will say, shame on you for dissing Kyrie Irving. He's just at home reading his Flat Earth book, minding his own business, and you take a shot at him. That's a bad job by you. I was surprised with what I saw in game one. Fred VanVleet, future Nick, as you know, the only guy they probably can sign in free agency. He had been money in round one. He was like 21-8 on 50%+ shooting. He looked like a guy ready to cash in this offseason. And then he just completely wets the bed in game one. 3 of 16, 2 of 11 from three, a team worst plus minus of minus 28.
Yeah, VanVleet, Rob G, during the season, just for whatever reason, can do nothing against the Celtics. And it's unclear who exactly guards him. They do a lot of switching, but like he can't score on Jason Tatum. We know he's not going to get to work on Jaylen Brown. So his best chance is against like Kemba Walker, but he's not getting, Kemba Walker's too quick for Fred VanVleet to get by. So he's not even getting to the foul line. I don't see anything positive here at all for the Raptors. I'm not going to bury them. It's just one game, but it is definitely not a good start for the Raptors.
You know a guy. Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
We like to bring fire early to start the week. And I want to start with LeBron James. You know, we'll do a little boycott, but I want to start with this, Doug. He's now 14-0 in the first round in his career. Michael Jordan didn't do that. Kobe Bryant didn't do that. LeBron, and another impressive notch in his belt. He will go on to face probably the Rockets. You know, we'll find out here in short order if they advance past the Thunder. I'm still of the belief that LeBron is going to kind of become once again in that discussion with Jordan for the greatest ever. Let's just say LeBron wins a title. What does that do to his legacy?
What helps? It clearly helps. I mean, it does not hurt his legacy in any way. The Last Dance really helped convert some of the what is the term? I'm trying to think. There's a movie about a British company that used their ads to help, in some people's minds, sway the election for Donald Trump, right? Where the compromisables or something. You know, like there's, most people have dug into their trenches, either they're Jordan or LeBron. Sadly, and then there's the percentage of people in the middle, and it's not that many, and that's what tips an election, right? Well, that's where we are with Jordan and LeBron. I think it'll bring some people over. Let's see how it happens. Let's see if it happens.
Yeah.
And then let's see what happens in the future. He's always going to be in that discussion. I'm of the Jordan guy. I also think that like the 14-0 in the first round of the playoffs is while it's an actual stat, like, okay, the comparison is in Jordan's second year when they made the playoffs, he had a broken foot. He comes back. They play maybe the best Celtics team ever in what was a 5-game series, and he scores like 49 and 63 in his first two games. Like, they weren't winning that series regardless, you know? So, whereas LeBron has never been in that position where he's taken on a one seed, he's taken on the best team in the league. He was great last night. He was a little disappointing a couple times. I thought that the rest, the time off, probably helped him. But he was really good in game four. And LeBron has had a remarkable season. There are some athletic limitations on him for the first time maybe in his career. Just some nights he doesn't have it. He has to let Anthony Davis and other guys carry the team. But, we're watching, a guy who's going to set marks and do things that whether anyone has ever done before or will do after, they'll be very hard marks to catch up to. I mean, there's a chance that he becomes the all-time NBA scoring leader. There's a chance.
Past Kareem.
Right? And for a guy who scoring is not necessarily what he does best, that's even more remarkable.
Yeah. So, Doug, you brought up something interesting. There are people dug into their camps on each side, and then there's a group in the middle. From sports media to politics, you're seeing that increasingly now. You've got to pick a side. Doug, I don't know, man. I seem to still go by you want to be in the middle, especially on really divisive topics like college football right now. They demand that you pick a side. Well, which is it? Well, I think there's some nuance there. I don't know, Doug. I seem like it feels like you sometimes skew middle, but other times you skew to the extremes. I don't know. In life, are you an extreme guy? Are you a balance, a moderate? I mean,
well, I'm pretty much a, I mean, well, on sports topics, I'm actually generally more of a, I just have my own opinion. I don't know. I think most of the world is actually in the middle. You know, it's like, we're really getting down to it. Like, do you want abortion to be legal? Yes, because you don't want back alley abortions. Like, we're not going to be a country that doesn't allow that. But do you want late term abortions? No, no, that's not, you know, unless, you know, it's going to compromise the woman, right? Like, there's, do you want no guns? Well, it's not really realistic. But do we think people should have AR-15s? No, I don't think people should have AR-15s, right? That's where most human beings operate, is in the middle, which is honestly, like, it's sports television has done this. And it's brilliant because oftentimes that's the key to any sort of barbershop argument. One guy says one thing, the other guy says the opposite. We argue. But the truth is that I think most people, you have your opinion, but you're like, man, LeBron's awesome. He's really, really good. I just think Jordan was better, like XYZ, Jordan was better. So I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I do think, like, in politics, I'm very much a centrist. And in sports, I mean, look, I believe our job has become a little bit complicated because of the way sports television has gone. You're doing one thing, which is giving your opinion, but you're not always doing the thing you're supposed to do, which is giving people perspective. And now that I'm old enough to have lived through Bird, Jordan, Magic, I should be not just saying how great LeBron is, but like, hey, let me explain to you what was so awesome about Jordan and Magic and Bird and why they belong in the conversation and how it compares to Jordan. That's I believe, the two jobs we have. And I think oftentimes we don't do that job. Some people are not capable of it, right? Whether it's they don't have a good enough memory, or they can't truly analyze things. They're just, you know, they go by raw data or whatever. But I do think to those of us who are capable of it, those of us who live through things, to kind of explain the nuance that gets missed when you just look at box scores.
But how much has social media hurt that for us? Because, like, listen, there is a nuanced discussion around the NBA boycott that happened this week, but right. You could not have that on social media. I was not in favor initially of the boycott, and I let that be known. And I got, you know, people got angry. People got very fired up. But then I said, well, wait a sec. Why am I putting this on social media? Let me save it for a straight fire. I say it on the podcast, and Doug, I haven't received more, wow, that was pretty illuminating. There is a nuanced discussion here. Reaction than I have for any other podcast. Like, well, that's social media has hurt it, Doug.
Well, it's only hurt it because of our reaction to it. You know, somebody has a bad tweet and a company chooses to fire somebody, you know, like it's if you overreact because of social media, you know, and we shame people and we also act like people who are reacting on Twitter or whatever device it is, like that they're real human beings, that their opinions matter. They don't actually matter. Like we have these shows like all the entertainment shows where they'll use people's tweets about celebrities and say, you know, and say, well, this person was shamed for the clothes they were wearing in an Instagram post. Like, who cares what that person thinks? Like,
I'm with you on that.
Why are we giving them the time of day? Because they have, you know, Instagram on their phone. They can troll somebody. Like, I don't get it. There absolutely is room for discussion. I totally agree with you that social media doesn't want there to be a discussion. They want. What people want is affirmation that their opinion is the right opinion. That's what they want.
And have you seen the movie Bombshell about Megyn Kelly, Fox News, Roger Ailes? You got to see
heard
it.
It's very good. Yeah, I've heard
it's amazing. I watched it. I had seen it, and my wife hadn't seen it, so we watched it last night. And there's a line in the movie where Roger Ailes says to, I think, Gretchen Carlson, "They have a Twitter account. You have a TV show. Why do you care what they're saying?" And that applies to a lot of people in sports media. Hey, you got a radio show. You got a podcast. Why do you care what these people are saying about you? But I feel like we don't go there enough, and we probably should go there more.
Yeah. I mean, it's like we want people to interact and engage, but then we get people to interact and engage. You know what I mean?
And it's not what you want. Don't tell me what I don't want to hear.
I think we're all guilty of this, right? Like, you have a take, you say something you think is really interesting, and we want there are people out there, real people out there, who we want to kind of know their opinion. And But you know, when you take it as kind of the law and as super, super important, when you allow it to dictate how you feel emotionally, that's when you get yourself in a bad place. I would, you know, it's hard because I have, you know, you can lose friends over Twitter. Why would you tweet that? I would say those aren't your real friends because they know.
Yeah.
You may have an opinion counter to theirs anyway. Here's the most fascinating part about the device and about how people react to things as well, is that you can say something that somebody would say is mildly offensive or upsets them, whatever, and they will tweet back at you the most vile thing ever. You know, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, wait a second. You went from something that you were offended by to using completely offensive language, and somehow you're okay? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Their handle probably is fake, but... Yeah.
And then the second thing to me, and this is probably the most important thing, and I thought Jason Whitlock kind of nailed it in one of his columns this week, which is like, hey, everything is not racist. Can we stop with that? Like, we've gotten to this default to where everything said by a white person is not racist. Now, there are racist things that are said. There's no question about it. But generally, when you have counter thought to whatever the super progressive thought is, it's just like, hey, I'm thinking about this, and I'm thinking about that. Like, we can't default to everything being racist. Now, sometimes the underlying issue could be race. But for whatever reason, we've gotten into this cycle where everything said, everything done, our first question is racism involved? And I'm not sitting here denying that racism exists or that there are people that are racially insensitive. But I do believe that in 2020, it's like my daughter's, I just dropped her off at the beach. She's 14 years old. She's like, Dad, in my generation, it doesn't matter what race you are. We don't care. And I was like, hey, guess what? In my generation, that's how I operated too. But apparently there's some people out there that are trying to convince us otherwise, and there are people that think otherwise. They're just not the majority of the people. It's those, as you point out, those kind of extreme views that are made more mainstream because social media makes you think that those things that are said on social media are what real people think, and they're just extremist views.
So, Doug, let me fast forward to, let's just say, 2 weeks from now, okay? And some police officer shoots somebody who's unarmed and he's black. Do you anticipate another NBA shutdown? And let me ask about the NFL. Do you anticipate the NFL saying, we're going to stop and this is unacceptable? Do you see this happening? Because it feels to me like the lesson learned from the Bucks and Jacob Blake is, hey, it's okay to be upset and outraged. Let's step back. Let's think things over, have some internal discussions among the league as opposed to just our team. And let's figure out a course of action as opposed to an impetuous, done, we're out, bye. Because this could happen easily here in the next 2 weeks or 2 months or 3 months or whatever.
I don't know if it'll happen easily, but I do think it could happen. I think we get on that kind of slippery slope of we did it once, but why doesn't this person's life matter? I still, you know, I will sit here and tell you that I don't agree with the Black Lives Matter BLM movement, but I do agree with the statement that Black Lives do matter.
That's an okay statement. I mean, I think a lot of people would agree with that.
I do, but we have trouble separating the two. People have trouble separating the
two. Well, on social media they do, yes. In real life.
You know, I don't know. But my point is this. You know, if you want me to take your movement seriously, what you need to do is anytime a Black life is taken, you know, obviously you shouldn't be shot in the back 7 times. Okay? Anyone who watched that video is disturbed by it and wants answers and wants an investigation. I don't think you're a human being if you don't feel awful. What happened? And more information comes out and you start to learn about Jacob Blake, but that still doesn't necessarily explain 7 shots in the back. Like that doesn't, I don't get it. I need more, and I would guess at some point there will be an investigation charge, etc. But anytime a Black life is taken, there's a child in Chicago shot by a stray bullet, like that person matters. That human being matters. We need to fix our society to where, honestly, our biggest societal issue is our value of human life, and that these human beings do matter. And I would like to have the same outrage, the same names of people who are innocent walking down the street, a stray bullet because some idiot fires off a gun. Like, those people matter to me. And that's something that personally bothers me. What do I think happens in the NBA? I don't know. I mean, we've gotten to this point where, you know, the numbers, the raw data tells you this happens very, very seldom. You'd hope it happens never. That would be my supreme desire, was that it never happens again. If it happens, I would guess that they're going to have to go through a process of calming down and chilling out and figuring out exactly, you know, how to proceed. I think, you know, one of the things, goes back to social media. Like, it comes out, the video comes out, and it's alarming, it's disturbing. There's another video that comes out. You're like, it doesn't really make it better. It gives a little explanation. So I don't know, Jason. I guess we'll just have to take it as it comes. It's like anything else. 2020 is a year that we never, it's like a bunch of things that no one ever saw coming or we hadn't seen before. And we just have to react to it as it goes.
Yeah. How will we react when the Miami Heat defeat the Milwaukee Bucks in the Eastern Conference semifinals? Because I'm on board and saying that will happen. I've got my money backing up the Heat. I don't think the Bucks are
straight
locked
fire
in.
Hot take.
No, it's not that incendiary, Doug. I mean, come on, this is a great Miami Heat team. Heat are great shooting the three ball, best 3-point percentage in the league. The Bucks don't defend the three. The Bucks in the bubble they don't look like the regular season pre-COVID Bucks.
I would agree. What's interesting was when you talk to people at the scrimmage, you're like, man, the Bucks look really, really good. I think one of the things that's happened in the bubble, and this is a good thing, like, I'm coaching a basketball tournament. We play four games today, right? We played four yesterday. I'm exhausted, man. I didn't play any games, and I'm exhausted from coaching. So, but like, this is what it used to be like, not just in terms of playing basketball all day, but you're watching everybody, all the guys you like, play basketball all day, right? Like, you're watching your contemporaries. We used to go to Vegas and play. There's a big, John Farrell had the national championship, and you'd see guys play you'd never seen play before. You know, the New York Gauchos, Stephon Marbury, and the God Sham God, who was Sham God Wells back then. You know, you go watch them play, and you know, the really smart guys I'd pick up on their games and, know if I ever play against him, I know what he likes to do. Well, that's what's happened in the bubble. Like, these dudes, they have nothing else to do. Nothing. They're all bored, out of their mind. Mm. And all they're doing is watching hoop. And so they're starting to, everyone knows a little bit about what Giannis does, but all of his tells, all of his tricks, how Milwaukee plays, like, that stuff, that it's really hard to not get exposed in terms of your scouting report. And I also think that Eric Spoelstra is an excellent coach. Not that Budenholzer is a bad coach. I do think that of the story of the Heat, when it is ultimately told, having this young coach who had to prove himself to LeBron, there was the pushback early on. One of the things that's come out of it is he's a marvelous coach. Really, really good. What will the reaction be? I think the reaction will be, by many, Giannis has got to get out of Milwaukee.
Yes.
Okay? But the truth is, in NBA league circles, is Giannis can't shoot. And Giannis is his own worst enemy. And sure, do they have the greatest supporting cast in the world? Like, no. But it's actually built around his skill set and how he has to play in order to be at his best. And if he was able to carry a team with a jump shot at times, I think the outcome would be different. If they lose, I believe the narrative will be Giannis has got to leave Milwaukee, when the truth is that Giannis just doesn't shoot it well enough right now. There's just things that he is missing in his game. There's doesn't have the calm it takes, having been there before, to win big.
I'll get you out of here with this one, Doug. So for whatever reason, social media loves Carmelo Anthony. He won at Syracuse. He was a legendary young player with the Nuggets going to the Western Conference Finals. The Knicks loved him. He's never been a winner, never made other players better in my eyes. He's now 36 years old. Is Carmelo Anthony in the league next year? We know his contract with the Blazers is up, and they're cash strapped. I mean, they're way over the cap, highest salary cap number this year. Is he in the league next year, and where do you think he fits, if anywhere?
I mean, like, look, how did it work in Portland? They had injuries. They had a need. And you had superstars that were accepting of his skill set. He accepted a role, a tertiary role at best. I look, to be a superstar, you have to make people better. He was never a superstar because he didn't make people better. He's a great scorer, a great three-level scorer. But he struggled, as anybody would, with the kind of de-evolution of going from go-to guy to third or fourth option. And, you know, that's not his thing. I think you really struggle with the game that's changed where, you know, when you're a superstar, you can get away with not being great, not being engaged defensively. You can't when you're a role player. I also think that, you know, the best thing about his game is mid-range and post-up. And that's no longer really a part of the NBA. Although there are times in the playoffs where, I'll give you an example. I thought, you know, Joe Johnson was on the Rockets when they missed all those threes. And I thought, give it to ISO Joe. Let everybody catch their breath. Let him go to work. It's not analytically efficient, but there is a purpose to it. You know, getting the ball to a guy at the elbow and letting him go to work. Everybody else can kind of breathe, can space, can catch and shoot. And it does slow the game down a little bit.
Yeah. Well, that's Doug Gottlieb, Fox Sports Radio. He's on FS1. He has an all-ball podcast. It's very good. Check that out. Doug, hey, thanks for taking the time and enjoy the rest of the playoffs.
Anytime, dude.
The only thing better than sitting on your couch watching the game is making money while you do it. Here's your best bet.
All right, on to the best bet to wrap up the podcast. It's 6-3. Remember, we had to take a couple days off last week as the boycott happened, but I'm feeling good. I went 3-1 Sunday. If you guys follow me on Instagram, Twitter, you've seen my picks. I really irrationally like this team Monday night, and it's the Miami Heat getting 5.5 against the Bucks. I have been prattling on for some time now about this Heat team. I've officially picked them to win the series. I just believe three-point-wise, they will give the Bucks fits. Duncan Robinson, you're going to learn a lot about him. Tyler Hero, who's, you know, in a season when Ja Morant and Zion Williamson were dominant rookies. People are forgetting about Tyler Hero. I'm telling you, he is a special player. And what I've seen from the Bucks so far in the bubble, just a loosey-goosey defense. It's Giannis and a bunch of guys, and the bunch of guys haven't been playing well. Wouldn't shock me if the Heat won game one outright. I've taken the Heat in six. Give me Miami getting 5.5 points. It's your best bet for Monday night. All right, folks, thanks for listening. Great numbers last week. We head into September. A lot of NFL coming up. Remember, subscribe, rate, review. I'm out.